Eddie, the 10-year reunion. Chapter 4. Autumn, Part 1. The autumn semester begins at the high school and at the university, a date that just goes by on the calendar for Eddie and the rest of the tribe, except for, perhaps, Johnson. Teaching physical education at the high school, Johnson is the only member of the tribe who is still involved in academia. Johnson is now the head track coach at the high school, something Eddie knew would happen many years ago when he once traveled to the future. This year, Barbara is at home taking care of George. Taking a leave of absence, Barbara will not be teaching for a while, but is still coaching the high school distance team. Dr. Zunday, still the athletic director for the school system and a physical education instructor, is still coaching the field events. Over at the university, Mr. Fraser and Athena Layton still coach the undefeatable powerhouse that is expected to take all the medals in the indoor track divisional meet again this year. This does not make the competing teams very happy, for they have nothing to look forward to. But, as Dr. Zunday would say, that would be their problem. Mr. Fraser and Dr. Layton are teaching a track and field class at the university, where prospective high school students practice with the team and earn college credits. Other universities have attempted to duplicate Dr. Layton's program, but have failed miserably. But that, too, would be their problem. Over at the office of Davies and Rice, LLP, Eddie, Kathy, Mark, and Paula sit across the table from Mr. Davies and Mr. Rice, discussing a legal matter. Chucky has filed suit against Eddie, Kathy, Mark, and Paula. Chucky alleges that his four adversaries have trespassed on his property and that Eddie and Mark once kidnapped him. Chucky is demanding $100,000 for the emotional trauma he claims he suffered. Eddie and Mark could easily just write the check, but why? The entertainment value of the case is worth taking it to trial. Hearing the evidence, Mr. Davies and Mr. Rice assure the group that Chucky's case will be laughed out of court. Mr. Rice also assures everyone that Mr. Savage, the attorney who is representing Chucky, is quite incompetent and is only taking the case to collect a paycheck. Mr. Rice strongly suspects that Mr. Savage is getting paid up front by Chucky. No sane attorney would take Chucky's case on a contingency basis, where they would receive a percentage of the settlement. Mr. Rice's assessment of Mr. Savage would be correct. Mr. Savage has somehow convinced Chucky that he has a rock-solid case. Mr. Savage has collected thousands of dollars from Chucky to prepare the case, and has charged Chucky several thousands more to pay for the trial. Chucky continues to pay Mr. Savage's bills, hoping to make pay dirt on the day of the trial. And, as long as Chucky continues to pay Mr. Savage's bills, Mr. Savage will continue to send them. Being paid for the time he puts into the case, Mr. Savage cannot lose, financially, that is. The autumn semester also brings the annual coaches' meeting of the divisional track coaches. During the meeting, the topics of discussion include reviewing the order of events at the meets, any proposed rule changes, setting the meet dates for the following academic year, and any other issues that may be of concern to the teams in the division. Representing the university this year is Mr. Fraser, Dr. Layton, Dr. Bonamo, and Dr. Karakova. Dr. Karakova, being the regional rules expert, attends the meeting every year and is often the voice of reason among the group. The first hour of the meeting, as usual, is rather boring. The comical highlights are a discussion where Dr. Larry Gable, who always has something to complain about, inquires whether the track lanes must be a standard width or whether the width really matters. Dr. Gable wants to convert his outdated 6-lane gravel track to an 8-lane all-weather track on the cheap. Dr. Karakova informs Dr. Gable that the lane width must be 1.22 meters, which is the metric equivalent of 4 feet. Dr. Gable should have known that. Moving on to what he considers important business, Dr. Peter Gregory, the meeting chairman, suggests, "I do believe, my friends and colleagues, that it is time for another full audit of the teams in our division. My personal concern is that one team in particular still dominates the division, and several teams in our division, while they are what I would consider highly competitive, have not had a decent showing in the divisional meets for several years. And I sincerely believe that one university in particular really needs to be put under a high-powered microscope. It would appear that budgetary constraints that apply to the rest of the team seem to have no meaning to one university in particular. Already knowing to which university Dr. Gregory is referring, Dr. Layton interrupts and asks Dr. Gregory, "May I ask, sir, to which university in particular you are referring?" Dr. Gregory replies, "Do you really have to ask, Dr. Layton?" Dr. Layton replies, "Yes. And, for the record, please provide a definitive answer to my question." Answering Dr. Layton, Dr. Gregory replies, "Why, Dr. Layton, it should be obvious that I am referring to your university." But Dr. Layton already knew that. Dr. Layton responds, "Please do not entertain me, Dr. Gregory, with threats pertaining to the review of our accreditation. I can assure you, sir, our university will endure any scrutiny that the auditors may deliver. In fact, in the last few years, we have slightly decreased the amount of scholarship money we've awarded to track athletes. In response to your threats, Dr. Gregory, I suspect that a few of our athletes would rather pay full tuition at our university and win, as opposed to attending your university under a full scholarship and lose." Several coaches in the room snicker, knowing that what Dr. Layton said is true. Now ticked off, Dr. Gregory replies, "Dr. Layton, I believe that your words were uncalled for." Dr. Layton replies, "The truth is often hard to swallow, Dr. Gregory, especially if one is in your shoes. In sports, despite what others may say, winning is everything." The history behind the heated, yet diplomatic, exchange between Dr. Gregory and Dr. Layton is no secret. Many years ago, when Athena Layton ran track for the university, Peter Gregory ran for another university in the division. Peter met Athena at a track meet when they were both running for their respective universities. Not knowing Athena was married, Peter asked Athena out on a date. Athena refused, informing Peter that she was married. Meet after meet, Peter persisted in asking Athena out, until he ran into Mike Stone, Athena's husband. Mike informed Peter that, if he so much as looks at Athena again, he will rip him apart, leaving him in unrecognizable pieces, and feed him to the sharks. Mike Stone, a Greco-Roman wrestler in the heavyweight class at that time, could have easily made good on his promise. Since then, Peter Gregory has held a great animosity toward Athena Layton. Continuing the heated exchange, not appreciative of Dr. Layton's exposing of facts, Dr. Gregory informs Dr. Layton, "It does appear to me, Dr. Layton, that you've implemented some of the thesis material yourself that some of your athletes have produced in the last few years." Dr. Layton asks, "Will you please clarify specifically of what you are speaking, Dr. Gregory?" Mr. Fraser sits back with his arms crossed and whispers to Dr. Karakova, "I think Athena is about ready to rip Gregory apart again." Dr. Karakova whispers back, "Gregory doesn't stand a chance against her, and he knows it." Clearly wanting the other coaches to know what Dr. Layton's university is up to, Dr. Gregory discloses, "Well, let me first mention a few thesis topics, which, I may add, have led to the issuance of advanced degrees at your university." Referring to his notes, Dr. Gregory announces, "Thesis number one, psychological aspects of athletic competition and their effect on the inappropriate engagement of the fight or flight mechanism." Athena interrupts and tells Dr. Gregory that thesis was inspired by Mark Svoboda, who was the master of psychological warfare. And I might add that thesis led to a master's degree in psychology and had absolutely nothing to do with the School of Exercise Science or our university's track team. Dr. Gregory replies, "Point taken, Dr. Layton." Dr. Gregory continues, "Thesis number two, anabolic effects of nutritional supplements and their relation to increasing athletic performance in the field events of track and field." And I might add that thesis discusses which supplements cannot be detected on any blood or urine test. Thesis number three, the efficacy of classical and novel distraction techniques, and appropriate countermeasures in the track and field arena. Thesis number 4. The long-term psychological effects of the improper engagement of the fight or flight mechanism on the sports field. Not appearing to be concerned in the least, Athena answers Dr. Gregory's charge by asking, "So what? What's your point?" Now unraveled, Dr. Gregory exclaims, "What's my point? My point is that this material has no place on the track." Athena confidently replies, "Sure it does. Haven't you ever seen Muhammad Ali before a boxing match?" Laughter arises from others in the room, irritating Dr. Gregory even more. Trying to gain the upper hand, Dr. Gregory claims, "These are clearly inappropriate topics for a thesis. I can't believe your university grants advanced degrees for researching those topics." Not letting Dr. Gregory finish his ranting, Mr. Fraser quickly responds, "It can't be too much of an inappropriate topic, since we often win by using many of the methods researched." Dr. Gregory rolls his eyes, but all the eye rolling in the world will get him nowhere with Mr. Fraser or Dr. Layton. Taking control of the conversation and putting it to rest, Dr. Layton informs Dr. Gregory, "I'm very glad, Dr. Gregory, that you have taken the time to review our research. I'm also guessing that you, and others sitting here today, have also examined our research leading to our training protocols. If you took the time to review our research in the realm of training protocols and methodologies, and took the time to incorporate the theories presented in the research into your own training programs, you might just earn a medal or two in the upcoming divisional meet. So, please don't entertain me with the appropriateness or inappropriateness of the subject matter leading to the issuance of advanced degrees at our university. Quite frankly, Dr. Gregory, what we do academically is none of your business. And since your university does not offer advanced degrees in the exercise science field or in the field of psychology, you, sir, are not even remotely qualified to judge our programs." Putting an end to the verbal wrestling match, Dr. Karakova suggests to Dr. Gregory, "Let's move on to the next topic. We're clearly here today to discuss track and field, not academics." Stepping back onto the mat of the verbal wrestling match, Dr. Gregory informs Dr. Karakova, "With all due respect, sir, I have one more issue to discuss regarding the activities at your university." Dr. Karakova replies, "Only one. I'm very surprised." The casual observer would recognize that Dr. Karakova's last statement was purely to irritate Dr. Gregory and is a subtle form of psychological warfare. Raising his next issue, Dr. Gregory explains, "Dr. Karakova, my second issue revolves around your university's dual enrollment classes in track and field. I think we all know that these so-called dual enrollment classes taught at your university are for the sole purpose of training certain high school track and field athletes before they attend your university. It has also been brought to my attention that several track athletes from other universities have attempted to obtain dual enrollment status with your university to take the class, and their admission has been denied. And in the few cases where a track athlete has been granted dual admission to your university, they were subsequently denied enrollment in your track and field class." Dr. Karakova, who has been taking notes, asks Dr. Gregory, "Are you done?" Dr. Gregory replies, "Yes, sir. I'd like to hear what you have to say." Standing up and walking to the front of the room, Dr. Karakova explains, "If a track athlete from another university was denied admission to our university, the denial was likely resulting from academic criteria, not their performance on the track. In cases where college students were granted dual enrollment status, they have been administratively denied the opportunity to take the track and field class." Interrupting Dr. Karakova, Dr. Gregory exclaims, "Administratively denied? That doesn't seem fair by any stretch of the imagination." Dr. Karakova explains, "Stretch your imagination a little further, Dr. Gregory. The policy of administratively denying students from other colleges and universities from taking the class came from President Caldwell, Dr. Layton, who was provost of our university at the time the decision was made, and myself. That's just the way it is, and that's the way it will be. And there will be no discussion on the matter. So, get used to it. Not letting the subject rest, Dr. Gregory asks, so, what you are saying, Dr. Karakova, is that no track athlete attending any other university will be permitted to take the track and field class offered at your university? Dr. Karakova responds, you can ask the question 20 different ways, Dr. Gregory, and the answer will be the same. And let me add this. Our university offers a class entitled Advanced Physical Conditioning. To take the class, the student must, and I repeat, must be on one of our sports teams. The Advanced Physical Conditioning class is not open to the general student population, nor any dual enrollment students. Dr. Gregory asks, may I ask why that particular class is not open to anyone other than those on a sports team? Dr. Karakova bluntly replies, no. It's none of your business. Mr. Fraser laughs, promoting others in the room to follow suit. Putting the issue of why the track and field class is closed to athletes of other universities, Dr. Karakova continues, now, getting back to your original complaint about high school students in the dual enrollment program. Advanced placement classes and dual enrollment status is an academic, not an athletic, issue. Offering track and field classes to high school students in a dual enrollment arrangement clearly falls under the jurisdiction of the university's academic program. If you even attempt to disallow the class, you'll have to completely eliminate any and all dual enrollment classes offered by every university in the entire country. You, sir, are not even remotely prepared to fight that battle. Addressing Dr. Gregory's other issue, Dr. Karakova continues, explaining, you have also implied that our dual enrollment classes are for the sole purpose of training track and field athletes before they attend our university. First of all, the high school students enrolled in our university's track and field class are not contractually bound to attend our university in any sense at all. They can attend your university if they want to. Several of you sitting here today have attempted to emulate our program. As far as I know, none of you who have attempted to duplicate our program have succeeded. So, let me ask this. Why was our university's dual enrollment program acceptable when other universities attempted to emulate our program, but when those attempts failed, our program is no longer acceptable? And let me also ask this. Why did your programs fail? We have a long list of high school students waiting to get into our track and field class. And at the same time, you closed your program down. Had you succeeded in your program, you would not have brought the issue up here today. I could be wrong, but I detect a little hypocrisy here. Knowing that he cannot win this argument, or any other argument with Dr. Karakova, Dr. Gregory announces, okay, already. We'll revisit this topic at a future date. That is Dr. Gregory's way of trying to slide out from between the proverbial rock and a hard place. Dr. Karakova takes his seat, wondering if the childish complaint session is over or just beginning. Dr. Gregory asks the coaches, do we have any other items of concern that are not specifically mentioned in the agenda? Dr. Nicholson stands up and announces, I do believe, sir, that there are other serious issues that have gone unaddressed regarding Mr. Fraser and his university. Glad to hear that someone else has a complaint against Mr. Fraser's team, Dr. Gregory asks, what issue is of concern to you, Dr. Nicholson? Mr. Fraser whispers to Dr. Bonamo, here it comes. The mother load of all bullshit. Deviating from his usual haphazard style of babble, Dr. Nicholson confidently orates, there is clear evidence, and many rumors to the fact, that Provost Layton and her university have funded the installation of a new, modern-day, all-weather track at Northside High School. The cost of this new track is exorbitant, and far beyond the budget of any high school. With Northside High School as the clear training ground for Provost Layton's track team, this should be taken into account when auditing her university's budget. I've been out there and seen the new track myself. I can assure all of you, the track at Northside High School is one very expensive track. No expense has been spared. If Dr. Nicholson took a trip to see the new track at Northside High School, he drove for 1 or 2 hours to get there. Dr. Karakova whispers to Dr. Layton, "It sounds like he still thinks you're the provost of our university." Dr. Layton whispers back, "I see that." As Dr. Nicholson continues to babble, Dr. Layton asks her colleagues, "Who wants to take care of this one?" Mr. Fraser replies, "I will, if no one minds." Dr. Layton tells Mr. Fraser, "Please, George, be my guest. And please remind Dr. Nicholson again of the fate of the stolen camera he still alleges to be his." Mr. Fraser smiles and replies, "No problem." Finally finished with his poorly researched complaint, Dr. Nicholson takes a seat. Focusing his attention to Dr. Layton, Dr. Gregory asks, "Dr. Layton, would someone from your university care to address the issue raised by Dr. Nicholson?" Dr. Layton replies, "Mr. Fraser will be glad to address that issue, sir, and any other issues regarding the new Northside High School track." Still thinking that Mr. Fraser is some sort of uneducated idiot, Dr. Gregory instructs Mr. Fraser, "You may now take the floor, Mr. Fraser." Mr. Fraser is smart enough to figure that out by himself. Mr. Fraser stands and walks to the front of the room. Smiling like the cat that ate the canary, Mr. Fraser informs the group, "The outdated gravel track at Northside High School has certainly seen its better days. The old track hosted many victories for the high school track team, and many, including myself, were very sad to see it go. Many of the athletes who ran for our university went back and practiced on that old gravel track while they ran for us. They were astonished at the difference between the old track and a modern day track." Dr. Nicholson and Dr. Gregory sit back, waiting to hear how Mr. Fraser, speaking for the university, will justify spending the university's money on a track for Northside High School. Mr. Fraser continues, "The new track at Northside High School was designed by Louis Zeno, who ran for Northside High School many years ago. Dr. Zunde was brought in on the project, who primarily served as a consultant. Many years ago, Dr. Zunde, as many of you know, was a consultant to the company that manufactures the all-weather surface. Today, Dr. Zunde now sits on the board of directors of that company. Mr. Zeno and Dr. Zunde came up with a really good design, if you ask me. Their design is every bit as good as the one at our university." Dr. Nicholson, back to his old self, interrupts, reprimanding Mr. Fraser, boldly stating, "I'm not asking for a history lesson, Mr. Fraser. Please, get to the point." Pointing to Dr. Nicholson, Mr. Fraser raises his voice and sternly replies, "Excuse me. Why don't you just shut up and listen? I'm getting to that. Just sit back and relax. I'll open the floor to questions and commentary when I am finished. Am I understood?" Dr. Nicholson reluctantly replies, "Yes, sir." Giving Dr. Nicholson a long, hard stare, Mr. Fraser pauses as dead silence falls over the room. No one else would dare to interrupt Mr. Fraser again. Mr. Fraser continues, "Now, where was I? Oh, yeah. Many of you know Edward Boganskaya and his wife, Kathy. They are the ones who initiated this project. They got together with Mark Svoboda, his wife, Paula, and Robert Bradshaw, and his wife, Erica." Looking at Dr. Nicholson, Mr. Fraser offers some side commentary, stating, "I'm sure, Dr. Nicholson, you've heard of all of them. They kicked your teams flimsiest year after year when they ran for our university." Mr. Fraser then exclaims to the group, "Our university did not put forth one penny for the construction of that new track. That track was fully funded by Eddie, Kathy, Mark, Paula, Robert, and Erica. Again, not one penny was given toward the construction of that track by our university." put in his place earlier by Mr. Fraser, Dr. Nicholson raises his hand to ask a question, as if he were in kindergarten. Mr. Fraser asks Dr. Nicholson, "Do you have a question?" Dr. Nicholson replies, "Yes, sir. I noticed, sir, on the plaque, that the track was dedicated to you." Mr. Fraser replies, "Yes. I saw that. That was a very nice gesture on the part of those who were responsible for its construction. I am deeply honored." Mr. Fraser then concludes, "Unless there are any further questions regarding the new track, I believe this issue can be put to rest." With silence in the room, Mr. Fraser informs Dr. Nicholson, "By the way, coach, the rightful owner of the camera you allege to be yours is grateful to have it back." And pointing to Dr. Gregory, Mr. Fraser instructs him, "Since you have nothing better to do than to audit shit, go ahead and audit where that track came from. Good luck. You'll need it. During your audit, Mark will mess with you big time." Mr. Fraser then informs Dr. Nicholson, "By the way, Jim, Mark Svoboda is the one who gave your university the name Dogpatch University. Courtesy of Mark, Dr. Nicholson's university is now known to all teams in the division as Dogpatch University." Gaining the respect of everyone in the room, Mr. Fraser walks back to his seat. Mr. Fraser whispers to Dr. Layton, "Does this shit ever end?" Dr. Layton replies, "Not as long as we keep winning like we have been." Mr. Fraser replies, "They'd better get used to it, then. I'm not about to start losing just to make them happy." Seeing Mr. Crumpler complaining about something, Dr. Layton whispers to Mr. Fraser, "I don't think they are done yet." Dr. Gregory addresses Mr. Crumpler, who seems to have his own complaint. Given the floor to air his grievance, Mr. Crumpler rises up, exclaiming, "The last 8 years, if I may say, have been ridiculous. We show up at a meet, give it our best, and walk away with nothing. Nothing. What have I told my team after every divisional meet in the last 8 years? I tell them they have to train harder, eat better, and have a positive mental attitude. My team is not stupid. They know something is drastically wrong in this division. In fact, I've had one of my best sprinters quit the team and try out for football." Mr. Crumpler continues yelling, screaming, and hammering his desk. Dr. Layton whispers to Mr. Fraser, "George, his team's problem is their coach. You can't just tell your team to train harder, eat better, and have a positive mental attitude after you lose and go back to the same failed methods that caused you to lose to begin with." Mr. Fraser replies, "You're right, Athena. Crumpler tried to buy a winning sprinter years ago. What was his name? Major Nackler Brocklin, I think. That guy was a real screwball. Nackler Brocklin was always on edge during a meet. It makes me wonder what goes on during his training sessions." Athena suggests, "What goes on during his training sessions, George, is exactly what you're witnessing right here." Mr. Crumpler continues with his diatribe, exclaiming, "What's the point of competing if there is a zero chance of winning even one event? What's the point of competing if you get your head handed to you every meet? What's the point of competing if one team is allowed to dominate the division year after year? I have half a mind to withdraw my team from the divisional meet this winter. In fact, that's exactly what I will be doing. My team will not be showing up for the divisional meet this January." As Mr. Crumpler continues with his childish complaining, it is difficult to tell whether Mr. Fraser is getting angry, frustrated, or both. Breaking his silence, Mr. Fraser whispers to Dr. Layton, "This guy is the biggest baby I've ever run across in track and field." Dr. Layton replies, "I know, George. Just listen to him ranting, going on and on. He is quite the embarrassment to his university." As Mr. Crumpler points to Mr. Fraser, complaining about some unspecified underhanded tactics, Dr. Layton tells Mr. Fraser, "Here it comes, the personal attacks." Mr. Fraser replies, "I've had enough of him already." Granted the opening he was waiting for, Mr. Fraser hears Mr. Crumpler exclaim, What do you have to say for yourself, Mr. Fraser? Mr. Fraser whispers to Dr. Layton, I'm going to put an end to this right now. Athena sits back and relaxes, knowing that Mr. Fraser is about to give a motivational talk. Mr. Fraser stands up and asks Dr. Gregory, may I have an opportunity to respond to Mr. Crumpler's complaint, sir? Not wanting to address Mr. Crumpler's issue himself, Dr. Gregory smiles and cheerfully replies, the floor is yours, Mr. Fraser. Please, go right ahead. Truth is, Dr. Gregory has no idea how to respond to Mr. Crumpler's complaints. Mr. Fraser walks to the front of the room and begins, if there's something wrong with winning, I want to know what it is. They say, it doesn't matter whether you win or lose, it's how you play the game. Where did that ever come from? I say, if it didn't matter, they wouldn't keep score. When my team gets out there to compete, they compete to win. To my team, losing is not an option. To me, Coach Layton, and Coach Bonomo, losing is not an option. Giving an example, Mr. Fraser explains, many of you may remember Axel Braden. If that name does not ring a bell, let me refresh your memory. When he was a junior at our university, Axel Braden broke the world record in the 400-meter dash with a time of 43.75 seconds. Some of you may remember that event. Braden's record still stands today. What you don't know is that, earlier that year, Edward Boganskaya beat Braden at his own race. Eddie beat Braden in the 400 meters. Axel Braden, who calls himself the chiefest kicker, was not going to stand for that at all. Explaining how seriously his team takes their sport, Mr. Fraser continues, here's something you don't know. At that time, Axel Braden was one of our campus police officers. After Eddie beat Braden in the 400 meters, Braden knew he was in a lot of trouble. At Eddie's recommendation, Braden started patrolling the campus on a bicycle for several hours a day. Braden would sprint on his bicycle around the road that encircles the campus, then take a recovery tour through campus. Braden would repeat this for several hours a day, every other day, in the heat and in the cold. That's what I call dedication. Unless your athletes have that dedication, you will never beat Braden. Citing another example, Mr. Fraser explains, now, some of you may also remember Allison King. We picked her up from one of you guys in her junior year. She was quite unhappy with the coaching at the university she attended before we got her. Allison revealed to me that, during the workout sessions, the entire team would run around the track for 45 minutes and afterwards practice a few sprints. I understand that the coach of that team would yell out faster, faster during the entire 1 hour training session. A 1 hour workout of running around a track followed by a few sprints is not training. No wonder your team always loses, whoever you are. Mr. Fraser does not recall which university Allison formerly attended. For obvious reasons, the coach of that university does not dare to identify himself to the group. Mr. Fraser raises his voice and continues, how did Allison go from what I would consider being a reasonably good athlete to a divisional superstar in 2 years? During her senior year, Allison won the gold medal in every event I put her in. She never let me down. She was unstoppable. Allison certainly did not attain that level of performance by running around a track for 1 hour a day. Now, listen to this. Only three things changed. The first was Allison's training. The second was Allison's teammates. And the third was her coaching staff. Which of those three is responsible for her dramatic increase in performance? Mr. Fraser pauses for a moment, quickly realizing that no one dares to answer his question. Mr. Fraser then announces, I'll give you the answer. It's all three. Continuing with a story that he tells his team every year, Mr. Fraser continues, let me tell you a story, if I may. When I was in my early teens, on one particular Saturday, it was very stormy outside. My father was home, watching a track meet on television. My race, which many of you know was the 100-yard dash, came up. So, I watched that race very closely. It was clear which runner took first place, but second place seemed to be a tie. While my father and I were waiting patiently to find out who came in second and third place, I asked my father, "Who do you think came in second?" My father turned to me, looked me square in the eye, and told me, "George. It doesn't matter. They both lost. Only one person wins the race. Everyone else is a loser." I told my father, "But they give medals for second and third place." He replied, "So what? They still lost." Mr. Fraser then exclaims, "They can also give a medal for last place. What good is that?" Now, with everyone's attention, Mr. Fraser continues, "My father didn't stop there. My father wanted to teach me a lesson, so he told me, 'George, go and get your Bible.' I went to my room and returned with my Bible. My father told me to open my Bible to 1 Corinthians, chapter 9, verse 24, and read it to him. I read, 'Do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but only one receives the prize? Run in such a way that you win.' My father looked me straight in the eye and, with deep conviction, told me, 'George, there is only one winner. Everyone else is a loser. It's that simple. Mark my word. There is only one winner. If you are to run in such a way that you win, you must train in such a way that will enable you to win. And if you come in second place, congratulations. You are the first loser. Train harder and work more.'" Giving his competitors some advice on coaching, Mr. Fraser energetically explains, "All of you here know or have heard of Edward Boganskaya. When Eddie was in high school, I had the privilege of being his coach. When Eddie was a freshman, he won the silver medal in the 40-yard dash at the Indoor Track State Invitational Meet. After that, Eddie won the gold medal in the 40-yard dash for the next 3 years, and won the gold medal in the 100-yard dash at the Spring State Invitational Meet for 4 consecutive years. Can you believe it?" Mr. Fraser lowers his voice and continues, "But here's what you do not know about Eddie. Eddie put all his gold medals in a box where he couldn't see them. Left out on his dresser was his silver medal, where it served as a constant reminder to work harder." Mr. Fraser then exclaims, "Second place was not acceptable to Eddie. Second place should not be acceptable to you or your team either." Revisiting an earlier topic, Mr. Fraser, addressing Dr. Gregory specifically, announces, "Dr. Gregory, I understand from your earlier conversation with Dr. Layton that you've reviewed some of our research. Barbara Johnson and Eric Johnson, who coach the Northside High School track team, review all of our research. You may know Barbara as Barbara Wingate. Over the last 8 years at our university, more than 100 students have earned an advanced degree by researching athletic performance. Many of the theses associated with this research involve subject matter that is directly applicable to track and field. Barbara and Eric have read them all. Why haven't you?" Mr. Fraser then warns the other coaches, "Unless your athletes are willing to train like Axel Braden, Eddie Boganskaya, or Allison King, do not expect to win anything. Unless you, as a coach, are willing to study and implement modern training protocols, do not expect to win. Unless you get your team on an optimal nutrition program, do not expect to win. Unless you are as committed to winning as Eric and Barbara Johnson are, do not expect to win." Now speaking as if he was speaking to his team, Mr. Fraser reveals, "Now, listen to me very carefully. If you forget anything else I say here today, remember this. The one, and only one, attribute that will determine your team's success on the track is your team must attack the challenge they are facing with no fear. Did you hear that? Absolutely no fear. And you, as a coach, must attack the challenges you face with no fear. If you demonstrate fear, your team will see it. Fear is contagious. When you have fear, you are infecting your team with the inability to win. So, don't blame your team for your failures. Move on, and don't make the same mistake next time. Mr. Fraser concludes, "As I look around this room, I see fear in some of your eyes. Do you see any fear in my eyes? Do you see fear in Coach Layton's eyes? Do you see fear in Dr. Bonomo's eyes? No. You don't. Do you hear great confidence when Dr. Karakova speaks to you? Yes. You do. Instead of whining about losing, do something to change it. You will never win by complaining that you are always losing. If you expect to win, you must change what you are doing." Addressing Mr. Crumpler specifically, Mr. Fraser tells him, "Mr. Crumpler, to not compete is to lose by default, which is worse than trying and losing. How do you think your team is going to feel about that? What are you going to do? Are you going to go back to your team and tell them, 'We're going to get our ass kicked in the divisional meet, so we're not going'? Your team will see you as a coward. When you get to the divisional meet in January, and I sincerely hope you decide to attend, pay attention to the confidence level of the winners. The winners will display the one and only one attribute that determines success. They attack the challenge they are facing with no fear. Your job, as a coach, is to instill that same confidence in your team." Mr. Fraser then calms down and announces, "The dedication of the new track at Northside High School will be this coming weekend. I invite you all to attend. Coach Eric Johnson will be there. Coach Barbara Johnson will be there as well. The Northside High School track team will be there and, from what I hear, will be running a few exhibition races. This is a very big event. The news media will also be there. And you'll have an opportunity to meet quite a few interesting people." Mr. Fraser then informs everyone, "Coach Barbara Johnson, by the way, has an athlete who runs a 4-minute and 5-second mile. His name is David Hall. When Hall was a freshman, he ran somewhere on the order of a 6-minute mile. A 6-minute mile, incidentally, is slightly better than average for that age group, but nothing special. You might want to ask Coach Johnson what she did to get his 1-mile time down to roughly 4 minutes. And I can assure you, it was not running laps around a track for an hour a day." Now done with his pep talk to a group who should not need it, Mr. Fraser announces, "I hope I said something here to encourage everyone in this upcoming season. Thank you, Dr. Gregory, for giving me the floor. And, Mr. Crumpler, I hope I answered your concerns to your satisfaction." Mr. Fraser, receiving a standing ovation from the other coaches, walks back to his seat. Dr. Layton whispers to Mr. Fraser, "Thank you, George. Your presentation should get them off our backs for the rest of the day." Mr. Fraser whispers back, "Hopefully, it will stop their complaining for a while too." Mr. Fraser is not one to entertain complaining by his team, much less by other coaches in the division. Dr. Karakova tells Mr. Fraser, "That was really good, George. You gave them enough information to motivate them to get moving, but nowhere near enough information to actually implement what you spoke of." George replies, "I've read some of our students' theses. I tried to give these guys enough incentive to revise their training programs, but their problem is that our program is not for sale." Dr. Karakova whispers to Mr. Fraser, "It's a good thing all of our most valuable research is locked up in the exercise science lab. But they don't know that." Mr. Fraser strongly suspects that the other coaches will not make changes to their training program, but keep doing what they have been doing for years. As Dr. Gable briefly addresses a few administrative details before taking a break, Dr. Bonomo whispers to Mr. Fraser, "I'm going to guess the Spies will be back sometime soon. Observing our team's workouts is a whole lot easier than reading research." Mr. Fraser whispers back, "That's okay. We'll take care of them if they return." Dr. Bonomo smiles, knowing exactly Mr. Fraser's preferred method of taking care of business. Finished with reading the remainder of the morning's agenda to the group, Dr. Gregory announces, "This looks like a good time to take a 15-minute break. When we return, we'll discuss the schedule for the next academic year." During the break, a few of the coaches try to pump Mr. Fraser for more information. Using some of the psychological warfare tactics he has learned over the last decade, Mr. Fraser sends them on a wild goose hunt. By mid-afternoon, the meeting is adjourned, and the university's representatives head home. On his way home, Mr. Fraser thinks back to the meeting and hopes some of the other coaches will attend the dedication of the new track at Northside High School. Mr. Fraser suspects that a few of the coaches will try to recruit David Hall, the high school student who is getting close to a 4-minute mile. Mr. Fraser, however, does not care. Hall, who has been taking the track and field physical education class at the university, is looking forward to having Mr. Fraser as his coach. Hall has already received a full scholarship and has committed to running for the university under Mr. Fraser.